Shalom, this is Billy Brim and the Voice of One Witness radio broadcast, coming to you today from Prayer Mountain in the Ozark, 17 and a half miles east of Branson, Missouri. We are reading today from the book Practicing the Presence of God, which I use as a tool to keep my mind on God. I'm reading to you from Frank Laubach's experience. If you want to know who he is, or was, he's still in heaven, of course, but he's still alive there, you can go back and listen to our archives. I really wish you would go back 2 weeks. This is the second end of the second week, as I shared with you what God spoke to me concerning Psalm 73. And it has to do with our closeness with God, our entering the sanctuaries of God. And of course, to do that, we have to put our minds on Him. We're told that in Colossians. We're told that in Philippians. Now, I'm reading to you from Frank Laubach, who was an unknown missionary, really, in the Philippines until he was 45. He began to practice the presence of God, and he was so enveloped then by the manifestation of that presence that he became one of the best-known Christians of the 20th century when he died in 1970 at age 85. Now, he's talking about keeping your mind on God. What shall I call it? It's more than surrender. I've had that before. It's more than listening to God. I tried that before. I cannot find the word that will mean to you or to me what I am now experiencing. It is a will act. I compel my mind to open straight out toward God. I wait and listen with a determined sensitiveness. I fix my attention there, and sometimes it requires a long time early in the morning. I determine not to get out of bed until that mindset upon the Lord is settled. I feel convinced for me and for you who read, there lie ahead. I feel convinced that for me and for you who read, there lie ahead undiscovered continents of spiritual living compared with which we are infants in arms. This is Billy Brim with my comments. Oh, how that sentence calls to me. I want to discover those undiscovered continents. Bless the Lord. He writes, I wholly, with utter honesty, resolve and then re-resolve that I would find God's will and I would do that will, though every fiber in me said no, and I would win in the battle of my thoughts. It's in the thoughts, it's in the mind that we practice the presence of God. He writes to his father, one question now to be put to the test is this, can we have that contact with God all the time? All the time, awake, fall asleep in his arms and awaken in his presence. Can we attain that? Can we do his will all the time? Can we think his thoughts all the time? Or are there periods when business, pleasures, and crowding companions must necessarily push God out of our thoughts? Can I bring the Lord back in my mind flow every few seconds so that God shall always be in my mind? I choose to make the rest of my life an experiment in answering this question. He writes on another day, I have tasted a thrill and fellowship with God, which has made anything discordant with God disgusting. This afternoon, the possession of God has caught me up with such sheer joy that I thought I had never known anything like it. God was so close and so amazingly lovely that I felt like melting all over with a strange, blissful contentment. Having had this experience, which comes to me now several times a week, the thrill of filth repels me, for I know its power to drag me from God. And after an hour of close friendship with God, my soul feels clean as the new fallen snow. The experiment is interesting. He's speaking of his experiment of keeping his mind every minute on God. Although I'm not very successful thus far. The thought of God slips out of my sight for, I suppose, 2/3 of every day thus far. I start out afresh in the morning and find a rich experience of God. It's helpful to acquire the habit of reaching out strongly after God's thoughts. I'm finding every day that the best of the 5 or 6 ways in which I try to keep contact with God is for me to wait for His thoughts and to ask Him to speak. Now, folks, we're coming into something he wrote to his father that absolutely thrills me. And it reminds me of Philippians 4, 6, 7, and 8. Oh, this thing of keeping in constant touch with God, of making Him the object of my thought and the companion of my conversations, is the most amazing thing I ever ran across. It is working. I cannot do it even half a day, not yet. But I believe I shall be doing it someday for the entire day. It is a matter of acquiring a new habit of thought. Now I like the Lord's presence so much that when for a half hour or so He slips out of mind, as He does many times a day, I feel as though I had deserted Him and as though I had lost something very precious in my life. 10 days later, he writes to his father. As I analyze myself, I find several things happening to me as a result of these months of strenuous effort to keep the Lord in mind every minute. This concentration upon God is strenuous, but everything else has ceased to be so. I think more clearly. I forget less frequently. Things which I did with a strain before, I now do easily and with no effort whatever. I worry about nothing and lose no sleep. I walk on air a good part of the time. Even the mirror reveals a new light in my eyes and face. I no longer feel in a hurry about anything. Everything goes right. Each minute I meet calmly, as though it were not important. Nothing can go wrong, excepting one thing, that is that God may slip from my mind if I do not keep on my guard. If He is there, the universe is with me. My task is simple and clear. He made it his, as he begins to write in the year that I'm reading about. He had been practicing the presence of God before, but now he wants to have a continual mindset upon God. And I liked some of the practical things he said. He said that, for instance, if he's reading a book, he will pause every so often in the book and he will ask God, "Father, what do you think about this book?" And, of course, if the father doesn't think much of it, he lays it aside. But he said in his writings how wonderful and how marvelous it is, how that worry had gone away from him. Worries have faded away like ugly clouds, and my soul rests in the sunshine of perpetual peace. See, that's Philippians 4, 6, 7, and 8. The very universe has come to seem so homey. I know only a little more about it than before, but that little is all. It is vibrant with the electric ecstasy of God. I know what it means to be God intoxicated. On another day he writes, "It is our duty to live in the beauty of the presence of God on some mount of transfiguration, until we become white with Christ. After all, the deepest truth is that the Christ-like life is glorious, undefeatably glorious. There is no defeat unless one loses God, and then all is defeat, for it would be housed in castles and buried in fortunes." Let me repeat that again. It is our duty to live in the beauty of the presence of God on some mount of transfiguration until we become white with Christ. The Christ-like life is glorious. Doesn't that go along with Christ in you, the hope of glory? Christ in you, Christ within you. If you live with Him in the beauty of the presence of God, you will be transfigured as He was transfigured. When you practice the presence of God, when I practice the presence of God, people around you will be able to tell it. You will do what Psalm 73 said we should do. You will relate God's mission. You will be an angel, a messenger of God's mission. I remember hearing so many times Brother Hagin prophesy that the church, the glorious church, that our faces are going to be shining with the glory of God, the presence of God, and that we will walk maybe down a mall, in a mall, walk down the street, and people would even fall down with conviction. Well, folks, we don't have to wait until there's some kind of a glory cloud that explodes over our heads. It's the glory inside us that comes up, the presence of God, and manifests on our faces. The decision to manifest His glory, to be the messenger of His mission, is mine to make. And I make it by deciding to live in the beauty of His presence, in a place that I can be transfigured. I'm going to read you again. Oh, he said, this concentration upon God is strenuous, but everything else has ceased to be so. I think more clearly, I forget less frequently. Things which I did with a strain before, I now do easily and with no effort whatever. I worry about nothing and lose no sleep. I walk on air a good part of the time. Even the mirror reveals a new light in my eyes and face. I no longer feel in a hurry about anything. Everything goes right. Each minute I meet calmly as though it were not important. Nothing can go wrong, excepting one thing, that is, that God may slip from my mind if I do not keep on my guard. If He is there, the universe is with me. My task is simple and clear. We'll be glad to send you this book, Practicing the Presence of God, with Frank Laubach's letters, with Brother Lawrence's testimony. Just call us at 1-800-972-3447 and ask for Practicing the Presence. We'll send it for $5 plus shipping. It normally costs more. It's a beautiful book. We'll send it to you, but you'll have to say it's the radio offer to get the good price of $5. But please use it. More glory must be seen upon us. Shalom, shalom.